I just can't have any social life right now.
Don't worry about it. We're just having coffee. We'll be antisocial.
Hello and welcome to the second one of our espresso episodes. These are shorter and more chatty, probably, episodes of A Damn Fine Cup of Culture podcast. This is Matt, and I'm joined by Alan from London. Hello, Alan.
Hello.
How are things?
Just recovering from a bout of illness. Things are looking better now, so I'm on the up, which helps.
Okay, very good. Now, for those who didn't tune into last month's espresso episode, it's difficult to say, even if you have them every day. So for those who didn't join in last month's espresso episode, we're basically talking about things that we watched or read or listened to or played or whatever, perhaps ate, just very recently. And the thing that we're talking about today is basically the latest of the MCU movies. We've both seen Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. So, Alan, let's just start very simply with, what did you think of the film?
I have to admit, I wasn't a big fan of the film. I left the cinema quite disappointed by it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff to like in it. And there's a lot of moments and scenes I will go, that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think overall as a film, I was disappointed. And I think it is quite a weak film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How did you feel about it?
You know, it's funny. When we talked about these episodes over the last couple of weeks and months, we both said that, this is nice because this is where we can finally disagree about stuff. And I already thought when I came out of the film that we would perhaps disagree on this one. As it sounds, we probably won't, because I also found it quite disappointing. Like you, I think that, the moment-to-moment scenes were fine, I guess. There were a lot of fun bits. There's some bits, especially towards the end of the film, that I quite liked. But on the whole, I found it really, really unengaging. I mean, to some extent, I don't know whether that's because of Doctor Strange, because I also already thought the first film was one of the weaker MCU films. I mean, what do you think? Are you a big fan of the character or the character how he is in the movies?
I mean, I will admit, I was disappointed by the first Doctor Strange film when I sort of left the cinema. I remember feeling that was okay, but it wasn't fantastic. And I'm not a huge fan of Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange. I think it needed someone who seems more mysterious, seems to have an element of danger, which I don't think he has. But I rewatched sort of the films at the beginning of lockdown. And actually, Doctor Strange rewatching it was one of the sort of surprising highlights. I thought, oh, I've got to get through this. And actually, it held up really well. I think it's a nice film. I think his Doctor Strange is good enough. I sort of enjoyed it. Not being sure about Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange, I can go into that with this one preloaded into, I know I'm not going to be absolutely feeling fantastic about it. So that's not really a problem I sort of came out of the film having, because I already know he's all right. He's adequate to put it. But I'm prepared for that. He was adequate in this. I don't think he was the problem. But yeah, I think, especially having come to a much more positive opinion about the first film, this was even more disappointing.
Yeah.
And in ways that I don't think will be recovered by another watch.
Okay, so I'm curious now, what were the things you didn't like so much? What are the things that you think make this a weaker film, and it will even be weaker when you revisit it?
I think we're going to have to sort of veer into sort of spoiler territory now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, pretty mild spoilers, but effectively, I thought this was a really bad film for the Scarlet Witch.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
I think it, especially because I adored WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
I thought WandaVision was probably one of the best of the TV series that they've done.
Yeah,
and I think especially what I really liked about it is, coming from the comics, comics have this trope and they have this problem that you can't have incredibly powerful superwomen without them going hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
If you give women godlike powers, they don't just become evil or they don't become interesting. They always become hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge problem. And the comics have done that over and over again with the Scarlet Witch. I mean, it's almost like the only story they seem to have for her. And what I liked about WandaVision is it sort of, it it told a story of someone suffering from grief, someone that grief is affecting their powers in a bad way. But it didn't just go, and she's a hysterical woman.
Mm-hmm.
It had a much more interesting story about grief, about trying to come to terms with loss that I worked so well. And all of that is jettisoned, I think, by this film. That this film goes straight back to the comic book cliche. There is nothing interesting about the Scarlet Witch here. And halfway through, because, I mean, this is the big spoiler, she is the villain. She is the absolute cause of everything terrible in this film. She's the main antagonist for Doctor Strange. She basically wants the children she had in WandaVision back, and she's pretty much prepared to murder, kill, destroy universes to do it, which doesn't make any sense at the end of WandaVision. And you just feel... I just found at the end it was just like, okay, well, if she's going evil, let's enjoy her going evil. Let's make it unrepentantly evil. Mm-hmm. And then how is she stopped? She stopped because she sees her two kiddies frightened and she's realized what she's become.
Yeah.
And that is another lazy cliche. It's another way of just treating the character so poorly. I almost would have wanted the character at that point to kill the kids and still be evil. That would have been more interesting. But instead, we get this really tired journey, which, you know, effectively she's an hysterical woman, incapable of empathy, incapable of understanding what she's doing until two kids are actually crying in front of her. And just throughout the film, that treatment of the Scarlet Witch was just, I couldn't enjoy the film. It threw me out of it. And one of the interesting things that I guess is the price you pay by Marvel telling these, you know, the cinematic universe being one big story, is that it now tremendously weakens WandaVision, because the next time you watch it, at the end, you know what the next chapter is, and the next chapter is not going to be good. It doesn't lead you anywhere good with the character. So it's interesting in looking at Marvel as the big picture that if you misstep, it does actually weaken other bits of the franchise. I mean, was that the main issue that you had, or?
It was one of the main issues. I mean, very definitely. I think you've already said it, but I think it's not that it's disappointing that the character goes in a different direction than what we wanted. It's that the direction they take her in is not interesting and it's not enjoyable to watch. I agree with you. You know, they could have just made her a kind of panto villain, but really enjoyed that. It would have still been disappointing because I think WandaVision gives nuance to the character that wasn't there before and that was interesting and that made sense. And I think even if it is Marvel popcorn movies, they can have character nuance. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be Bergman. It doesn't have to be Bergman. Would be weird if it was Bergman. I'm now trying to imagine, you know, the MCU version of Persona. But you can still have these characters as, you know, approaching something three-dimensional. And I think it improves the kind of Biff, Sang, Bao, you know, fisticuffs. I'm not interested in the exchange of superpowers just as CGI fests. I'm interested in these characters as characters, and usually in the best MCU movies, they're engaging. Their issues are engaging. Their problems are engaging. And that is something that was completely dropped, completely and utterly dropped after WandaVision. And the thing is, at first I thought they did this because they thought, you know, some people would not have watched WandaVision. Not everyone has Disney Plus at home. But I don't think that's it, because I think that people who have not watched WandaVision will not understand the starting point particularly well as it is, whether they switch to, you know, villain mode within 2 seconds or over the course of a 2-hour movie. So there is no reason for this other than perhaps them thinking, you know, it's Sam Raimi, let's have something a bit more fun and panto-esque, but it doesn't succeed as that.
Definitely. Slightly distracted now by imagining Liv Ullmann and Vax von Sydow as Vision and the Scarlet Witch, which I think would be a version of the story I'd pay to see, definitely. But,
in Swedish, yeah. It would have to be Swedish with subtitles. Oh, yeah. But yeah, I mean, that was definitely a big thing. I think that was one of the reasons why I was just not into it to begin with. And it's really, it takes 2 minutes at most before she turns into a big, big villain. And in WandaVision, she also does things that are bad, but there's always this, how much of this is she aware of? How much of it is kind of subconscious, which makes sense with the story and the symbolism, as you mentioned, which is about grief. But here she very consciously says, I'm going to kill these people and I'm going to kill those people and I'm going to destroy this place because I want this and that, and whoever's in my way will be destroyed. And that's just a very, very different thing. I think the MCU villains that worked best had more going for them than that. But I think the other thing is also, especially the people who don't like the MCU movies, they always talk about, you know, how it's all content and it's, yeah, every film is an ad for the next film. And it's basically all fan service of a rather shallow kind. And I have to say, I'm not that much into the Marvel comics. I've read a couple of them, but I've never really followed them like a fan. But I felt there was a lot here that if you don't bring some kind of relationship to the movie, again, we're going to spoil some things. There's some cameos in this, like, for instance, Patrick Stewart as Professor X from the X-Men movies. There's Reed Richards from the Fantastic Four. All of these, I understand in an abstract way who these people are. And I think, yeah, yay, Patrick Stewart. But I have no relationship towards them. I don't feel anything about them. So if you just dump them in the film and that's all there is to it, and I felt that that was all there is to it, it's not going to do anything for me. So I felt like this was the first of the Marvel films where I very much felt this. I'm not the audience for it. I don't know how you feel, because you're more of a comic book fan.
I think the problem with this film is to some extent, which is not really something you sort of find so much in comics, but that it is all set pieces. So that whole thing of here's a cast of cameos from another universe, basically. That's the set piece in this film. That's one sequence that to some extent doesn't really need to be there. It doesn't really lead to anything apart from let's have a big fight with all these cameoing superheroes and make it look very Sam Raimi-esque in terms of camera angles and everything. But then it's over and done. And I think with comics, they will have crossovers. They will have other people, alternative universe versions appearing. But they're never quite this sort of irrelevant. They'll always be, and that's the story. That's what we're telling. This is what it's all about. So it just, once I'd sort of resigned to thinking this film is going to be set pieces, then you can sort of enjoy it on that level. But even then, it doesn't have that much to it in the sense. Like you said, you don't really learn anything about these other characters, and they've had no history in any of the sort of official Marvel films. So it is, you know, here's some IP and watch it get killed within the next 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of feels, because some of the cameos, so they have Captain Marvel, who is in this universe is the best friend of the Captain Marvel in the films that we have. Mm-hmm. So you sort of think, well, that's an interesting backstory. How did that happen? How did the her best friend, or often rumored that they're going to delve on the idea that they were actually a couple. Mm-hmm. How did her lover become Captain Marvel? That's an interesting story. There is no way that comics would not tell that story. Mm-hmm. They would immediately go, here's a story, and we'll do an issue, which is basically the story you've read before, but from this slightly different angle. This just has it there as dropped as sort of like, yeah, just a little bit of slightly rejigged IP. You're going to enjoy it for 5 minutes, and then it's going to be killed. Mm-hmm. And I don't get that engaged by that. Yeah. So I sort of felt that sort of thing isn't for me. And I think it contrasts really interestingly with the Spider-Man film, the recent Spider-Man film, which did crossing over of universes in the same way, in the sense that it took a little bit of time to at least make you be interested in these different characters crossing over from another universe. And they shortchanged some a little bit, but I think the underlying reason to care is there. And there's nothing comparable here.
Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely.
It just is really sort of disappointing on that score.
No, totally. I think that is really a stark, no pun intended, comparison to the Spider-Man movie, where I think this is something that the MCU by and large has done really well. They've introduced new characters, and in many cases they made them engaging, obviously with some kind of tried and tested, you know, writing tricks. It was never extremely original how they wrote these characters, but they knew how to give them some characterization that made you think, okay, I'm interested in this person. I wonder what they're going to do. I wonder how they're going to react. And with these, I really felt they were, you know, these weren't characters. They were like Wikipedia links, you know, want to know more about this. What's his name? Black, Black Bird, Blackbald, that's it. You know, go and visit his Wikipedia page. And no, I don't want to. I didn't learn anything about him other than he's got this superpower. And as I've said before, the superpowers themselves don't interest me. What interests me is how their personalities are expressed. And they had pretty much zero personality. Basically, it was Patrick Stewart there as a cameo. It was, what's his face? I mean, even someone like Tweetle Edgerfor, who's a great actor who does great work, also mediocre material sometimes, and there's just nothing there. So there were no engaging characters. They didn't even feel like they were trying to make them engaging. I was also wondering, because of the whole multiverse thing, that can quickly become arbitrary. You know, you bring in a new variant of the character, and in this one he's got a goatee, in this one he's got a ponytail, in this one he's a mass murderer who's killed billions. It can be arbitrary, but we've seen in Spider-Man Far From Home, not Far From Home, the other one, No Way Home.
No Way Home,
but
yeah.
Especially we've seen in something like Into the Spider-Verse, which I think is still a film that does fantastically with all of this, whether you're a fan or not. You can have these multiverses and they can still have meaning within the context of the overall story. And here they didn't. Here it really felt like, aha, see, there's this guy, there's that person, here's that variant costume. I can imagine a certain kind of fan enjoying that, but it's just not what I want out of the MCU. It's not enough. If it's there in addition to engaging characters, I'm okay with it. But here it felt like that was the only thing going for it.
I think it does feel like it might be a bit of a warning shot that in terms of Marvel creating the cinematic universe, that it kind of gets swallowed up by referencing itself.
Mm-hmm.
That it loses sight that you do have to tell strong standalone stories.
Mm-hmm.
Or the ease with which you can start playing with cameos, start just ripping off your own continuity. Like, remember this? Well, here it is again. Here's a cat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, here's someone you've... Then I think that can be very dangerous, because it does, I think, help promote stuff. It does give sort of an immediate like hook that gets people into the cinema. But I think it's to the detriment of the overall franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's almost like it's eating its tail by that point. It's not creating new stuff that might be what people might want to see again. And I think what's quite interesting, again, the contrast, I think with Spider-Man, I was surprised. I feared it for Spider-Man, and I was surprised it didn't go down that road. And actually, all those fears that I had really came to the fore in Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because apparently it was going to come out before Spider-Man.
Yeah, I also read that somewhere.
So I was sort of playing in my head, like, how that would work in terms of the two of them. The two films together, how you I guess it would, but I wonder whether there's an element of in the relative production stuff was learned, or I think Doctor Strange also feels like a heavily reshot movie, which probably wasn't just for that reason. It feels like maybe sequences weren't working, and they thought, well, we'd better just chuck in another fight here. We better chuck in something else here, and I think that was a sort of long running problem with it.
Mm-hmm. They also changed the director with this one, though, quite early in the game, right? I mean, originally, I think it was the guy who directed the first one, but then they changed to Sam Raimi. And I think that's another point. You've already mentioned the Sam Raimi-ness of it all. I think the reviews that I read, when they were positive, they mostly said, you know, well, Sam Raimi gives it more personality and character than most of the other MCU stuff. And I'm wondering, because, I mean, it's really what the non-MCU fans seem to see in this, namely the Sam Raimi-ness. I saw that in the last third of the film to some extent. I think there's some scenes there that are so over the top that they become enjoyable. But it's really that the stuff that otherwise the MCU is very good at, the immediately having some kind of character hook, that was not there. But how did you enjoy the Sam Raimi-ness?
I think I did. I think there's a sort of way he sort of directs that he enjoys gore and he enjoys horror. He has a sort of real joy at being slightly, like, a little bit extreme, and I sort of enjoy that. There's always been a sort of very sort of cartoony comic book aspect to his directing that is very sort of superficial but fun, and I think it sort of captured that in some of the film. And I thought, you know, when when that was, I felt that was on screen, like some of the sort of more monstrous moments. And also, I think one of the scenes that did stand out is the sort of fight with music, which was both like visually great, but also incredibly pointless. It had that sort of, it was great to watch, and which is very Sam Raimi. You had a whole sequence that was great to watch, but didn't really mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of summed it up in a nutshell. And that was a real fun moment in the film, but it wasn't really set up. Why the two Doctor Strange start fighting with music? They do because they just do, because it seems being a cool way of visualizing a fight. They have a fight, and then one wins, and that's it. And we're not going to play with music ever again. We're not going to play with the idea of visualizing music. There's no reason given why in this particular story it becomes a thing. That feels very Sam Raimi to me.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely one of the most enjoyable scenes, but I totally agree with you. It also came out of nothing. And that's where I felt that the whole thing, there was a certain shoddiness to some of the writing where, you know, I think the critics will call that the kind of the Disney polishing it, you know, so much that it's basically all the same, basically. The flip side of that is that I think the films tend to be fairly well crafted. The plots are quite well crafted. The dialogues, yes, there's a certain kind of house style to it, but usually that works. And I think here it really felt like when it works best, it has these ideas that come out of the blue, and those ideas work as themselves, as set pieces, as you say, but they don't fit in with anything else. And I think in the last third or so of the film, I just said, okay, let's just enjoy those bits for what they are, which are completely random but fun bits. I mean, it's also the fight with, what's her name, Captain Carter, and the other basically alternate universe superheroes. I felt there was some of that energy there, but at the same time, I felt that Sam Raimi was being held back by it being Disney and PG and everything. There were scenes where I felt he actually wants to be a bit more gory here, and it would actually fit. You know, make it a bit more Evil Dead almost. There's this scene, for instance, where I think Captain Carter is defeated by the Scarlet Witch with, you know, the shield basically probably bisecting her, but it's filmed in such a PG way that you're not even sure that that's what is happening.
I mean, I think I sort of grinned at that moment because I think it's pretty clear that she's just been cut in half by her own shield. And I think that's quite fun, just as a thought. I think it's, you know, I did sort of grin at that point, even though, yeah, like you said, they do sort of cut away from it PG, you know, 13 style. They're not going to show her, but I think it's pretty obvious that's what happened. And I think this sort of, it feels like that's what you'd probably get with Sam Raimi in a big budget Hollywood movie. You won't get the actual hero being cut in two, but you will get it very clearly implied that you've just seen them be cut in two.
But I mean, even in the Lego version, you'd actually get the little Lego minifigurine being popped into half and then kind of blinking at the camera. So perhaps it should have been a Lego movie.
I mean, they also have a sort of like, they don't really take that much advantage of the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
So you have like the odd sequence where it's like, oh, in one universe we were paint. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, we don't want to do that again. And they never do anything that interesting afterwards. It's, you know, the plot-wise, you can sort of say they go to one other universe. You wouldn't have to do much to rewrite this that there isn't really any multiverse aspect to it. Exactly. It's just a Scarlet Witch corrupted to get children. So it's not really having any fun with the multiverse, which I think something like, you know, Spider-Man Into the Spider definitely does. That really enjoys it and introduces what a multiverse is, like, to anyone in the audience will understand what it is. Whereas this seems it's sort of in there, but it's in there in a way that they're not gonna have that much fun with it. They could have had a Lego sequence. That would have been brilliant. They end up in the universe where they're all Lego, and you know, and they just don't. Apart from like a one montage sequence, they really don't do that. And again, that's sort of, it's a multiverse of madness, but this is quite a pedestrian multiverse. And I missed the madness.
Totally, it's definitely a multiverse of mediocrity. And in that respect, I think it really felt like they had to have that film because there needed to be a Doctor Strange sequel, and they needed to get it. It honestly felt like they needed to get Elizabeth Olsen and Wanda, the Scarlet Witch, out of the MCU. And that's all I take away from this, sadly enough. Even the fun scenes, I'm going to forget them. What I'm going to remember is how they basically ruined the Wanda character when she'd just become really, really interesting. And yeah, no, in that respect, I think it's soured me a bit on what's going to come next. But I don't know. Shall we perhaps talk about what's going to come next in terms of the MCU? Or shall we kind of slack off the film a bit more?
Well, I was going to say, sort of in fairness, I sort of mentioned the music scene. There was a couple of other things I sort of liked about it. So I did like Benedict Wong as Wong. Mm-hmm. And his profile, he's sort of appearing in quite a few of the films now. And I think I think the way they're playing him is really fun to watch. Mm-hmm. His sort of slightly cantankerous superhero mode. I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying the fact, actually, that they don't shy away from the fact that he is now the Sorcerer Supreme.
Yeah.
That they sort of mention that in Spider-Man almost in passing. And then, mm-hmm. and then in this film, he is the Sorcerer Supreme, and he doesn't lose a title. It's not like, oh, well, you've had your fun. Let's go back to Doctor Strange being the sorcerer. I think he's really good, and he's really entertaining, mm-hmm. and it does set up. I hope we see more of him. I do hope we see more. I'm interested in more of America Chavez as well. I think they set up a quite nice story here that mm-hmm. weirdly, again, going back to slagging off, they don't then develop in any way. And what really feels like we're dealing in the world of multiple B-rights is you've ostensibly got a story where a girl is traveling through the multiverse looking for her parents, and you've got a mother who wants to travel through the universe looking for her children, and they're the two antagonists. You've got a story there.
Yeah.
That's a setup for something really interesting that this film has no intention of doing anything with. And that just is a crying shame, but I think, you know, there could be something good done with that. But generally speaking, yeah, no, this is disappointing. But I mean, looking to the future, more Benedict Wong, more America Chavez. They've not been listed in anything that is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing it does sort of, again, making me slightly wary going forward is, I know you've not finished it, but I watched Moon Knight and I really enjoyed it. I think it is. That and WandaVision are my favourite of the Marvel TV series. And now I'm worried that if they announce, oh, Moon Knight's appearing in one of the films, I think I'm going to be very worried.
Yep.
Because by its nature, it's a character that's very easy to get wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And now I just fear if they bring it to a film, they're going to get it wrong. They're going to erase everything that's interesting and just go to the bare bones. This is Moon Knight, and we've got Oscar Isaac on the film poster. And I think that's probably going to be the legacy of this film for a while. So, yeah, I'm still sort of, you know, looking forward to what's coming up. I think that especially in the TV shows, does seem to be the place where diversity is happening, just in terms of format and in terms of genre. So I think I'm more interested in that. And the TV shows now seem more standalone.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Ms. Marvel and She-Hulk.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it is difficult to make all of this work so that, you know, for one thing, people have all these options. They could follow the TV series, they could follow the movies, but they're not required to, because the moment you require them to, it starts feeling like homework. Mm. And you just can't expect everyone to have Disney Plus. So they have to be standalone, but they should be connected. And I think that contradiction is one that's going to become more and more difficult. But I agree with you, I think, with the TV series, it's also where they can potentially play around with format a bit more. I mean, the She-Hulk trailer makes it look like it's basically something of a superhero law, legal firm, sitcom-y type thing. Mm. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like it could be fun. It's definitely got fun actors. From what I hear, the comics are also very meta, keep breaking the fourth wall. So perhaps there's even going to be a bit of Deadpool-ish stuff in there. I'm curious about it. I'm curious to see them trying out different things. What's the next film that's coming up? It's the Thor one, right?
It's the Thor, yeah.
Love and Thunder?
Love and Thunder, yeah.
That's, exactly. I liked the Thor 3 a lot. It's probably one of my favorite, one of the MCU movies of the last, how many years is it by now? Anything before the pandemic is just 100 years ago. But I'm kind of afraid that they know that they got something right with Thor 3, that they're just going to repeat what they did, which could work, but it would also be a bit boring, a bit disappointing. And beyond that, honestly, I don't even know which films are gonna come after that. I think I'm also just trying not to look forward to them too much, because after this one, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I share the same feeling about Thor, in the sense that I think Thor Ragnarok was great, but are they just trying to catch lightning in twice the same way? And I think it really could be something that if the comedy starts to misfire, it's the sort of thing where comedy can become a bit too smug, or they're a bit too self-congratulatory, then it can all fall apart. So I'm sort of excited but wary about Thor. Probably something similar with the Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which is sort of coming up as well. But yeah, I think, you know, I'm always a little bit wary before the films, because I know to some extent I've enjoyed a lot of them. I'm always a little bit worried, will it still be as enjoyable? And probably it's been good to have this film that's been able to punch the expectations down a level or two, and then just to be like, okay, well, let's see what happens next.
Sounds good.
I'm still on the train, I think. I think that's what I mean. Yeah, I'm still thinking, I'm still signed up for the films, I'm still signed up to try the TV series, so I've not been lost quite yet, but this film was a bit of a blow, I will admit.
But hey, I mean, in the meantime, we can think about Lego versions of this film or Ingmar Bergman versions. You know, come up with our own multiverse of movie madness.
Yes, definitely. That would be just storyboard the version of the multiverse we wish to have seen.
Exactly. Bella Tarr's Doctor Strange. It's 9.5 hours long, I hear. Okay, well, this was this month's Espresso. It's been fun talking to you, Alan, about a film that for once we both didn't enjoy all that much. And yeah, basically it's well and truly summer now, even if it's still May. Here it's really warm, so probably summer movies are going to start very soon. And we will be back also very soon with more of our, I was going to say Summer of Madness, but it's Summer of Directors. Doesn't quite have the same ring to it. And with more Espressos. Espressi? Either. So thank you very much, Alan. Thanks to our listeners, and we'll see and hear you in a month or a couple of weeks. Bye.
Bye.